Welcome to episode 1458 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. In our last episode, James took us inside one of the most painful chapters of his life, the years when Jesus left Nazareth and began his public ministry. As reports of miracles and astonishing teaching spread through Galilee, James remained unconvinced. Familiarity had dulled his sense of wonder, fear made belief seem dangerous, and the quiet predictability of the workshop offered refuge from the unsettling possibility that his brother truly was the Messiah. Even when James and the family sought to bring Jesus home, they found themselves standing outside while Jesus spoke of a family bound together not by blood, but by obedience to God. James returned home once more without following him. Yet something had begun to shift. The workshop no longer felt as solid as it once had, and the life he had carefully built could no longer quiet the questions growing within him. Acts of the Apostles, Part 2, Chapter 3.
The Apostle Paul writes it in five words. He is listing the resurrection appearances to Peter, then to the 12, then to 500 at once, then to all the apostles. And then, almost as an aside, then he appeared to James. That was not one of the 12. That James was me. Paul does not say where or when or what was said. He does not say what it cost me to admit that what I had spent 3 years refusing to believe was true. He simply records the fact and moves on. Five words. I have been grateful for that restraint. What happened between my brother and me does not need an audience. But I am old now, and the things I have kept private are becoming things I need to say before I can no longer say them. Let me tell you about the cross first, because you cannot understand what happened after without knowing what came before.
Unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds. Lifted up from the earth will draw all people to myself.
I was in Jerusalem when they crucified him. The week had been strange from the beginning. The city felt taut. The same quality of tension I had recognized from the years of watching his ministry escalate, but sharper now, closer to breaking.
Judas, do you betray the Son of Man with a kiss?
When they arrested him in the garden, the news reached us before morning. I will not tell you what that felt like. Some things are not for narration. I did not go to the cross. Ah! Our mother did. She stood there, John with her, through all of it. Some of the other women went, including one of my sisters, but I could not make myself go. Whether that was grief or cowardice or some combination I am still unable to separate, I cannot tell you even now. I heard the accounts afterward. He was judged unfairly, humiliated, beaten, mocked, and crucified.
People of Israel, you have asked for this man's life. I am innocent of his blood.
And then he died. My brother, the man who had sat across from me at 10,000 meals, who had worked beside me in the workshop, who had been patient with me in ways I had not deserved, was dead. Hung on a Roman cross outside the city wall and buried before Sabbath. There was grief. There was something I can only describe as the collapse of a tension I had not known I was carrying. As if a question I had been holding taut for 3 years had simply been cut, and the sudden release was its own kind of devastation. I had not believed he was the Messiah, but I had not entirely disbelieved it either. And his death settled the question in the worst possible direction. A Messiah who dies on a Roman cross is not a Messiah. That is not what the word means. That is not what any of us had been waiting for. Or so I thought. For 3 days, that is what I thought. The reports on the third day were impossible. The tomb was empty. Mary Magdalene had seen him in the garden and mistaken him for the gardener until he said her name. Peter and John had run to the tomb and found grave cloths folded and left behind. He appeared to the disciples in a locked room, walked to Emmaus with two of them, unrecognized until the breaking of bread. I heard all of this. I did not know what to do with it. For 3 years, I had been the skeptical brother, who had stayed in the workshop while others followed, who had stood outside the house in Capernaum while he named everyone inside as his family, who had not moved. I had built my unbelief carefully, brick by brick, out of all the reasonable things one could say about a man who claimed too much. And now the reasonable things were failing. The tomb was empty. The witnesses were multiplying. Something was happening in the city that did not feel like mass delusion or conspiracy. It felt like something I did not have a category for. The rest of the family was excited by the news. They went out to meet with the disciples. I was sitting alone when he came. I will not describe him the way John describes the risen Christ in his visions. The white hair, the eyes like fire, the feet like bronze. That is not what I saw. What I saw was my brother, the same face I had known my whole life. Not translucent, not glowing, not otherworldly in any visible sense. Present. Completely, attentively present. As if you were the only person in the world and he had all the time in it. He looked at me for a moment without speaking. And in that silence, everything I had not done came up in me at once. The 3 years, the workshop, the reasonable life, standing outside the house in Capernaum, not going to the cross, the careful brick-by-brick architecture of my unbelief, and the way it had collapsed on the third day into something that was neither belief nor unbelief, but just rubble. He said my name.
James, my brother. Oh, James.
That is all I will tell you about what he said. Some exchanges between brothers belong to brothers. What passed between us in that room was not doctrine or commission or theological statement. It was something prior to all of those things. Something that could only happen between two people who had grown up in the same house and shared the same unrepeatable particular history. He said my name. And 30 years of knowing him, the workshop, the patience, the truthfulness, the question in the temple, the space I had no door into, collapsed into a single moment of recognition. Not of the risen Lord, though that too. Recognition of my brother, who he had always been. What I had always, somewhere underneath the reasonable life, known him to be. I can tell you what happened immediately after. I believed, not carefully, not with qualifications, all at once, the way a door opens. Paul writes it in 5 words. Those 5 words contain what I've just told you. And 30 years of a life that went one direction and then, in a single afternoon in a room in Jerusalem, went completely another. I've been asked whether I regret the 3 years. The honest answer is, I do not know. What I believe is that my path, the skepticism, the workshop, the standing outside, may have been necessary for the work I was given afterward. A leader who had followed easily might have led differently. The long resistance made the conversion unambiguous. No one who knew me could doubt what had happened, because no one who knew me could doubt what I had been before. The workshop taught me patience with difficult material. The 3 years of watching from a distance taught me how the world looks to someone who has not yet believed. Both have been useful in Jerusalem, where I have spent my life since trying to build something that will hold. My brother showed me what a rock actually is. Not something that never breaks, something that, having been broken, holds.
There is profound hope in James's story because it reminds us that no one is beyond the reach of Christ's grace, not even those who have spent years resisting him. James had every reason to believe, yet he chose skepticism. He watched from a distance while others followed. He stayed in the workshop while disciples left everything behind. He even failed to stand at the foot of the cross. But the risen Jesus did not meet him with condemnation. He met him with his name. That is often how Christ still works. He does not merely overwhelm us with evidence. He calls us personally. He speaks into the rubble of our doubts, our regrets, and our failures, not to shame us for where we have been, but to invite us into what he has been preparing all along. The greatest miracle in this chapter is not simply that Jesus rose from the dead. It is that the resurrection transformed a skeptical brother into a devoted servant. The same Lord who opened James's heart still calls each of us by name. And when we answer, doors we thought were forever closed swing open by his grace. To be continued.